You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey everybody, thank you. This is a beautiful party. You've invited all of my friends. We're at the end of the new season, which is now the old season. I don't know what else to tell you. Thanks for watching for season four, listening with us, whatever. I mean, the hints we gave weren't always great, but I know a few of you followed along, and we've been growing substantially. So, a few things. Yes, this is the last episode of this season. And next month, if you've been listening, you know, we're going into a month of reruns. I've remastered them slightly, but I really haven't changed much. We have a new intro, though, so you can kind of recontextualize. It's a chance to get some of the older podcasts back on the feed for you guys. You'll also notice maybe that the feed is shrinking. And it's not because it's bad stuff or we're getting it. You can still get all the episodes on the website. It's more along the lines of, we don't want a bad episode to be at the end of our feed where there's an audio issue or something when we're trying to get new listeners. So if you one of your favorites is no longer available, just check the website. Everything's still there. Also, for next season, we're doing a little bit of a format shift. Rather than, say, give you a hint about the new episode, we're going to pick a theme and stick with the theme. And so starting in August, our new episodes are going to be precocious kids. And for those of you who remember movies in the 90s, there were a lot of precocious kids, from the Mighty Ducks to, you know, Richie Rich and pretty much everything Macaulay Culkin ever did. And we've done a few of them in the past, of course. Think of the Pagemaster, with that schmuck Macaulay Culkin plays who just complains about everything. But this is a whole month decided on it. We're going to be curated by one of our regulars, so that kind of excitement is exactly the kind of thing that we want going for us. Further, because we love you guys, there's going to be one bonus episode a month, and it's going to be something different each time. It might be a failed spinoff. It might be a long-going series Daniel put together. It could be any number of things, and I think you guys will enjoy it. Not to mention, next year, we're going to do four crossovers with the Geekly Oddcast. So without further ado, please enjoy this vaguely homoerotic, oh, actually super homoerotic, vampire story interview with a vampire. Thanks, guys.
The Terminus Doctor Who podcast brings you passionate geekery that's often effusive, sometimes loquacious, but always full of love for the world of Doctor Who. Armed with a queer woman's perspective, you can look forward to the show covering both the new and classic series, as well as other forays into the so-called Hooniverse. So please check out the Terminus podcast for your dorky dose of deep discussion. All, of course, brought to you with a fun side, because as the Fourth Doctor once said, there's no point in being grown up if you can't be childish sometimes. So head on over to terminus.libsyn.com to find the podcast. The Terminus Doctor Who podcast. Queer, opinionated, Whovian, female.
Hey, you! Yeah, you! What are you doing after you finish this great podcast you're listening to?
Well, whatever it is, you're going to blow that off and listen to the IMDb Journey podcast instead, hosted by Daniel, that's me,
and Dean, that's me. Join us on our journey as we tackle the IMDb Top 250 list, breaking down one movie a week, giving our own rankings as we go, as well as our incredibly intelligent and insightful thoughts too.
We also throw in a random quiz or movie battle every once in a while and have a punt on it, because us Aussies, we love a good punt.
Daniel, this is a G-rated promo. You can't say that.
I said punt, Dean. Punt. You dickhead. So come join us on the journey by subscribing to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or any other podcast apps, and follow us on Twitter at IMDBJourney.
And now back to your regular scheduled programming.
Well, Welcome to Miami Defender Childhood. This week we watched 1990, whatever. Interview with a Vampire, Colin, the Vampire Chronicles, the first one. Which I guess is the thinking man's Twilight. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defender Childhood and Riff Ron Cineprov. And on panel we have
Matthew W. Quinn, author of the actually scary horror novel, The Thing in the Woods.
I'm going to stop you there. No. Whatever. Go ahead.
Charlie Rose.
Hello, this is Daniel. And when someone bit me, all I got was hepatitis.
Kelsey Morrow, Kelsey R. Morrow on Instagram.
Are you sure no one else wants to plug anything? We're good. Okay.
I can think of one or two things I could plug, but it'd be rather inappropriate.
Yeah. The author of The Thing in the Woods. So we watched this movie. It ended up on our list. I don't exactly remember how. I'm shocked it did as well as it did in general, because apparently the producers didn't think it would do well. For a vampire horror movie, it came out 2 weeks after Halloween. They released it in the middle of November for some reason.
Well, it's not really a horror movie. It's more of a period drama movie.
What is it?
Yeah, I agree with that, because it's got the 90s period piece with the tape recorders on tape and all the smoking. And then you have, like, let's go back to...
Well, that wasn't a period
America.
Piece. That wasn't a period piece. That was just
that
daily
was present
life.
Day.
And then they have, you know, all the stuff in New Orleans with all the really fancy costumes. Then in France with all the really fancy costumes.
This also might be the most homoerotic movie we've done.
We did Top Gun. No.
Okay. Yeah, I think Top Gun is more so than this one.
But Tom Cruise, who's in both of them, doesn't end up making out with anyone like he does in this movie. Because he kind of first bases it with Brad Pitt for a lot, and then they go up into the sky together.
And they adopt a child.
So
maybe there's different ways to do it. Like, Top Gun is going to smack you in the face with flesh, and this is a abusive quasi-love story.
Are you just describing your dreams again?
Maybe
slapping you in the face with flesh is quite a dick move. You're welcome, Charlie.
I mean, this is definitely when this movie came out, it was just one of the gayest things that wasn't gay on the screen.
You could write an entire film thesis on this and Twilight as women writers writing about repression, sexual repression.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Twilight is the most misogynistic film ever made. A woman doesn't get her power until she's married. It's like the whole synopsis of the first three books. But, like, this is just something. This is something.
Well, at least this has an adult treatment of sexuality. I mean, Twilight's really a 12-year-old girl exploring these feelings that she doesn't understand.
There's also an age thing, which we'll get to. But
well, come on. This is really about Anne Rice being melodramatic and trying to be shocking and messing with people's sensibilities about sex.
In the right city in America to do it in, frankly.
Yes.
Vegas?
No.
Old school. Vegas with nouveau riche.
With this in mind, Daniel, you should give us our plot.
Okay, so in 1994, this interviewer named Malloy, which you learn his name in the credits, interviews a vampire.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's a guy named Louis, who was a plantation owner in 18th century New Orleans, who's turned into a vampire by Lestat. And from there, Louis is very, very disturbed over the fact that he has to kill to survive, and Lestat's taunting him over it. But eventually he succumbs to his impulses and bites this 5-year-old girl named Claudia, and from there Lestat turns Claudia into a vampire and they adopt her as a sort of surrogate daughter. From there the family tension mounts up and Claudia tries to kill Lestat and they both flee to Europe to look for other vampires, and that journey really doesn't go all that well for them.
Perfect. I'll take it. So we should kind of start with these characters, because this movie isn't really a movie as much as it is kind of just a character study.
Well, the novel's a lot better than the movie.
If it's not on the screen, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
No, honestly.
No, that's fair.
So our opening scene with Malloy, this is literally a serial killer's greatest story, right? Because he's like, I interview people, so I was following you to interview you. Oh, and it turns out to be the serial killer. And he's like, you think you're a vampire? He goes, Yes, I think I'm a vampire.
So, do you live up here all by yourself? No, it's just a room.
Well, I liked how they how he showed Malloy how he is a vampire. I was expecting him to just pop out his fangs and hiss at him, which in a Hammer movie he probably would have. But instead, he just kind of jumps around the "I'm fat, I can move faster, you can blink" routine.
Ooh, Hammer, remember, deep cut.
Hissing
is not
romantic.
A more straight up horror movie.
Mm-hmm. They need to carry the theme. Hissing is not romantic.
And he has those veins, those weird colored eyes, and how he moves. It's kind of unsettling, and that's kind of the point. This is a predator. It should give you the willies.
Not as much as a predator in, like, Nosferatu, either the original or the Herzog remake in the 70s.
You guys are way overthinking this, man. You put vaguely attractive guys who are thin-looking. Like, that's it. Like, you guys are giving it so much more effort. Like, Stan Winston is on a different planet with this movie, right? Like, the director, the script, they don't care about this stuff. He manages somehow to make their skin look redder and rosy right after they fed, and the longer it's been between feedings, the paler and more veiny they get. Like, you know, again, like an Irish woman in the sun. Like, I don't know, it's crazy. It's
like something that's actually a vampire. When you drink all the blood, you're reddened and flushed, and then eventually you get drained and you metabolize it, I guess.
You get hungry.
Yeah.
I will say one other thing, positive, before we get into how weird this movie is. They actually explain how you become a vampire versus you kill someone.
Oh, yeah, that made a lot more sense than other, like, Dracula movies where you just get bit.
And sometimes they become a vampire and sometimes they don't. Other than that, though, this movie is really bizarre. I'm going to just throw it at you.
I'm not completely sure if there's a coherent storyline. It's just, these are my adventures throughout my life. I'm just telling you this stuff.
Well, yeah, pretty much.
Nothing much really happened other than they lived, they moved, they went places, and they met other vampires.
And they had an abusive relationship, which is pretty much what this whole thing was. Louis is Lestat's battered wife.
I will say this.
He's not wrong.
This movie was not for us. It's not for me. It's not for Daniel. This is a bunch of handsome men wearing good-looking Victorian outfits. I mean, like, the costume and the set design is incredible. Their accents aren't, but everything else is very well done.
Well, can I go back to the first time I actually saw this? It was on basic cable, and I only saw maybe like 30 minutes of it. And it was at the Theater of the Vampire scene, and this was me in, like, as a freshman in high school, I was so pissed that it was blurred.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering how you could edit that scene for television.
They didn't really. They just blurred it when they ripped that woman's clothes off.
Like Japanese porno. Well,
so here's something to understand.
How would you know what that looks like? I'm sorry, Charlie. How would you know what that looks like?
Because it's porno.
When this movie came out, I was a sophomore in college. I come out 4 months earlier. I had been exposed to Vampire the Masquerade that summer previously, and that same month I signed up for my first Vampire LARP. So this was my jam.
Oh, this, like, is right in the...
Yeah, right there. And I obsessed over this movie. I saw it 4 times in theater.
Uh-huh.
And then the following year, I watched an additional 5 to 6 times, lost track.
Mm-hmm.
Me and my friends, we watched it continuously. Because you know what? It is a 2-hour-long exploration into LARPing. A bunch of people wearing frilly shirts sitting around talking about the agony of a eternal life.
Oh my God, black candles and...
So goth LARPing?
I mean, you could hear the Susie and the Banshees playing in the background.
Oh my God, you're absolutely right, man. And on top of this, he is so, like, it's like the most Catholic guilt movie I've ever seen, too. Like, he feels guilty about everything he does. He feels guilty for existing. Like,
well, because he's supposed to be dead.
Well, and the poster shows, you know, drink from me and live forever. Although you don't see that. I don't remember that being in the movie.
It wasn't.
It was not.
Yeah, the whole communion thing with the vampirism, almost like a sacrilegious parody of it.
It's funny, I had forgotten Brad Pitt was in this because he is such a nothing. Like,
well, he's so forgettable.
He is.
His performance is wooden. I think he's trying to be like alien and tortured and whatever, but it comes across as awkward and wooden.
According to the Tribune, he hated doing this movie.
Oh.
It shows.
I rented it on Amazon Instant Video, and they have little bits of trivia popping up as you watch the movie.
Yeah, X-ray.
And one of them was like, he tried to quit because he had the contact lens, but it turned out he had to pay $40 million if he did. Yeah. So he did.
Didn't David Geffen produce this movie?
Yeah, it's a Geffen. Yes, that did. Explains the nudity that, for no
that
reason.
That explains a lot.
And the amount of gay.
And the amount of gay, yes.
I didn't really have a problem. I thought Brad Pitt did a decent job as someone who's kind of emo and tortured. And this Lestat is just off the chain.
Oh, Tom Cruise was amazing in this movie.
Yeah, he was probably the best actor.
Well, hilarious.
That's what Lestat was supposed to be. He's like this very overtly dramatic bastard who just loves making fun of Louis.
So in anticipation for this movie, I listened closely to every bit of tidbit that was coming out. Well, apparently Anne Rice early on made a comment that she did not think that he would be a good Lestat. Caused all sorts of drama and uproar.
I think she bought an ad in the New York Times condemning the casting choice, which that's...
She's extreme. Whatever.
Yeah. But she's also writing the screenplay for this.
That must have been awkward.
Yeah. So eventually she did turn it around. She did come back and say, you know, hey, no.
I was wrong.
He's going to be good. She did the apology tour to make the movie, you know.
Well, you know what? Good for her for at least admitting she was wrong.
Yeah. Because he was amazing.
He was the best part, other than Antonio Banderas, who shows up 75 minutes in for 20 minutes.
I disagree. I think Kirsten Dunst was the best part of this movie.
She's in a different movie, guys.
I know, but that's why it works.
I think she did a good job as well, because she acts like a frustrated teenager because she's trapped in the body of a 10-year-old.
And then goes
forever.
On a killing spree.
Amazing.
They are vampires. That's kind of what they do.
No.
No, no, no.
No, it's literally not, and they want to kill her because of this. Do you forget this part?
Yeah, when they found that corpse underneath all of her dolls, that bit.
Yeah.
Even Louis was a bit like, you're taking it a little too far.
And Lestat was like, she's going to get us caught and captured, right? Like, the whole thing is to not get attention drawn to you. And she just starts murdering people.
Yeah, and including Lestat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my problem with, if Lestat is killing two or three people a night, someone would notice, even in the
19th, oh, I doubt that.
In the 18th century. I mean, especially if he's feeding on Louis' slaves. The slaves kind of had, and in the antebellum period, had this like plantation to plantation gossip network. It would get pretty far that slaves being murdered.
Yeah, but who would care?
Yeah, no one would listen to slaves. That's probably why. Like, they might have been talking, but like,
that's why they were afraid of him.
Yeah,
because he's murdering them. That
yeah. Remember that
code?
Remember that thing where he kills who was that? Thandie Newton, and comes out and says, "Your master is the devil," and then burns down his plantation.
Well, they already knew that because they were doing all the voodoo rituals before. Well, I thought that was pretty interesting because in a Catholic country like Louisiana, the religion among the slaves is more like Catholicism or more Caribbean than in Protestant.
Did you just refer to Louisiana as a country?
Yes, he did.
Region, happy.
Well, slightly.
Some people might argue that, but anyway.
No, you're fine. But to this bigger point, that's why Louis's talking bad about him for trying to kill the nobility, right? Because that's people that you notice. You don't. We even now don't investigate when hookers end up dead.
Yeah, that's kind of you would think what vampires would prey on would be homeless people, prostitutes, slaves. He'll cite and care about, but Lestat is like murdering people at parties repeatedly.
That's what he says. That's why Lestat's a bad dude. He's a bad vampire. That's what Armand said. This is a plot point, Matt. We need to keep together on this.
You know,
he of all people is lecturing Claudia about being discreet.
You know, the whole thing, in order to really make an effective vampire movie, has anybody at the table seen Shadow of a Vampire?
Nope.
No.
It's a great movie, isn't it, Charlie?
Movie, yes.
Do you remember that speech that Max Schreck gives about his reaction when he first read Dracula?
Yep.
The whole sadness about it that kind of works with Louis, is that he was this creme de la creme of society. He was a plantation owner. He was part of the 1% of 18th century Louisiana. Then he gets turned into a vampire and lives forever, but slowly he loses everything that he had. He's just this being that can't die but doesn't really exist.
Well, and bear in mind, you know, the whole story of Louis is like this classic vampire trope of how he retains his humanity. And because of that, he is the most attractive vampire because he's so tortured.
Oh, the angel trope.
Yes, completely.
Well, and what's worse about this is because it doesn't matter. they don't explain why you need to burn your stuff. You need to get rid of it because if one old guy lives in the same house for 200 years, people get suspicious, mm-hmm. right? They don't bother with that. They don't bother with any of it. They're just like, it'd be convenient if the house burned down. Oh, look, the house burned down.
I thought maybe he had finally lost control of himself and attacked another person, Yvette.
It's Catholic guilt.
Yeah.
I will say, too, the thing that bothers me is the thing a lot of 70s and 80s movies do with slavery, which is like, oh, the slaves just love their master. They all just love Louis so much. Is that it's the stupidest fucking white guilt thing.
Yeah, I noticed.
It's the lost cause bullshit of like, oh, how great is it? We were so good to those. Bullshit, guys.
Yeah, that I yeah. So, I mean, I was saying. They're saying, oh, we're worried about you're not going to the slave quarter. You know, given what slave masters would sneak into the slave quarter for, you'd think they'd be relieved that he's not coming out of his house to bother them.
Yeah, that did stop me dead, too. We should talk about a little bit about this kind of stuff, though. Brad Pitt plays Louis. He is a... Okay, just really quick, side note. When you turn into a vampire, that's how long your hair always is, too?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that no, was... that's actually, that's how it works.
It did.
The hair, like when Claudia is like cutting her hair and everything, that scene was really weird.
She has her Britney Spears moment where she just tries to shave her head and it grows back. God damn it. That was so weird. She looks like Little Orphan Annie for 4 seconds and then her hair comes back into a full white.
Ironically, she still looks like Little Orphan Annie at that point.
She goes through such a little hissy fit. It's so cute. From there, we get introduced to Lestat, who is in whatever little town he's supposed to be in. It's not in New Orleans yet, but...
Now, he's like... Louis's like gambling and deliberately trying to get people to shoot him because he's in grief over his wife and child dying, and Lestat just notices him. Is that what's going
yeah,
on?
Yeah, he's got a death wish, but didn't have it in him to kill himself. All so right. He wants to make someone else kill him.
Again, it's Catholic guilt. If you kill yourself, you go to hell, but if someone else kills you, you go to heaven. It's right there. It's not a hard movie. It's a very Catholic guilt movie. Anyway, from here, Lestat, this is literally the gayest scene in the movie. Because Lestat, like, embraces him, licks his neck, and then they literally start floating up into heaven like it's the end of Grease or something. And then when he comes down, he whispers, like, an inch away from his face, say the words. And I think he says, you either die or you come with me. And he goes... Say yes.
I'm going to give you the choice that I never was able, that I was never given.
Yeah. And he says, yes. And he bites into his own wrist.
And then
when Lestat gives his blood, like, again, Christian metaphor, gives his blood so that he may retain everlasting life. Metaphor. And Louis,
metaphor.
It's the most on-the-nose thing we could imagine. But then Louis realizes... It sucks to be immortal, something that is also a very, very old trope.
Yep.
Very good. Okay. We also don't get really into, at this point, how to kill a vampire. So Claudia tries everything.
Well, there's that bit where Malloy, they cut back to the present day, Malloy's like, so do stakes through the heart work? And Louis's like, nonsense.
Or crucifixes?
I quite enjoy looking at crucifixes.
Could that be homoerotic? You got the half-naked Jesus on the cross and he's staring at him?
That would explain a lot about Anne Rice, frankly.
I think that's more of her thing than homoerotic.
She did have that brief moment in the early 2000s where she went total Christian.
That's true. She did.
She did.
Oh, I remember
just
that.
Just like John Wayne Gacy and Son of Sam. My second note in this is literally, there's a lot of ugly people in this movie. All the townspeople were chuds. I don't know what they did.
But it's to draw attention to how beautiful Louis and Lestat and Claudia are.
I don't know what Lestat did, what Tom Cruise's diet was to prepare for this role, but he's like, you can't even see his teeth. His cheeks are so sunken in. Meanwhile, Brad Pitt looks like he's chewing on an apple. He's a horse with an apple the whole time. Like... I don't know. It's just, it's really weird. Like, some of the choices that, like, because the effects are awesome. Yeah. I've never seen so much blood in a movie other than, I guess, Shining, when there's literally a wall of it. This is amazing.
Well, the scene where Lestat gets his throat cut. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, there is a lot of blood in that.
I mean,
the whole point, it's a vampire movie. Blood. Blood everywhere. Blood often, blood early.
Yeah, you can't have a vampire movie without blood. It's just not possible.
They try. I mean, I agree with you, but, like, I was surprised by it because nowadays they just don't show it, right? Like the Twilight movies, there isn't blood everywhere, and they're the biggest vampire franchise in history.
There's also fucking vampire baseball in that movie. Let's not use them as that standard.
Yeah. But if you're the biggest franchise ever,
vampire.
I have probably never seen Twilight.
I've seen the first
one. One of my brother's ex-girlfriends took him to a Twilight movie because she was mad at him.
That fits.
I will say Dracula Dead and Loving It has that one scene, which might be the funniest scene in all of Mel Brooks' movies. It's not a great movie, but that one scene where they just tap it and there's like a tidal wave of blood on Wings. I forget the actor's name, but he's the guy from Wings. And then the last character we need to introduce is Claudia. Claudia is a little moppet whose entire family dies of...
the plague.
I would say chemical weapons, because her mother is desiccated. There's nothing. She doesn't have teeth in that head.
Although Lestat still enjoys her, judging by the whole dance scene.
There's a dance scene out of Beauty and the Beast, for God's sake. Like, they're swinging around that room.
You know, he's Lestat. Of course he would.
Lestat is that annoying frat boy who gets way too drunk way too early in the night and then just starts to, like, let's go do something, guys.
Yeah, I really liked how they presented his character, because Tom Cruise can do the manic thing really well. Of course, if you remember him jumping on the couch, that's just probably how he is.
Well, he had too many thetans that day. He ate a bagel filled with Jewish thetans.
Had an arc break.
Yeah, right. I'm sorry, were you saying
something? No.
Okay. Anyway, Lestat has been mocking Brad Pitt, Louis, for weeks because he doesn't want to kill anyone. Again, filled with his Catholic...
I've had to listen to that for centuries.
Yeah. And he's been surviving off of vermin, drinking the blood of rats and such. But then for some reason, he sees this girl, and perhaps it's pity. We don't know. He's going to... because I get the feeling he was going to kill her out of... pity at first, but then can't go through with it. Again, goth kid who's going to kill himself but goes across rather than down the street.
Jesus.
It's the truth, man. Like, he's pale, he has long dark hair, and he's wearing clothes from the wrong era. It's like tucking a Hawaiian shirt into pants.
It's complicated. I think it was supposed to be he goes to comfort her and then he accidentally loses control, because that is... you know, the vampire tribe.
And that's who he is, right? And from here, he leaves her to die, effectively, because Lestat's like, hey, buddy, you did it! You did it! And he's like, oh, what have I done? Oh, what a world!
Oh, the pain!
But he brings her back to their house, presumably, and does the ritual where he cuts himself open. She drinks the blood, comes back to life, and immediately turns into, like,
oh, that was a great scene where she came back to life and was just like, I want some more.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, she's like a living Madame Alexander.
Yeah, she sucks him dry.
Yeah, and her comment, he keeps talking about Louis' house as, you know, our house. No, it's his house. You're his house guest. They make Louis a slave owner. He's already a parasite. Lestat is even worse. Like, he's sort of claiming everything that Louis has is his as well, and... eating the slaves, it's to 11.
Just a spoiled, rotten brat.
Now, what?
In the sequel, he gives up everything to be a rock star.
Yeah, and that fits.
Right.
I mean, it does. It fits.
It does. Narcissist.
Wasn't there also a moment where Claudia is sleeping with Louis in the same coffin?
She's supposed to be a little kid, and so when she has a bad dream, she crawls into bed with her father. I mean, that's kind of what it's supposed to be, in that Lestat is kind of... it's a boyfriend character, but it's also a parent, right? Because he's the one who created Louis.
Well, and Louis and Claudia, it's funny, because they take and... they try to do a very paternalistic, you know, father-daughter approach throughout the movie. And then as they get to Paris, you know, Louis is quickly corrected by Armand. No, she's your companion. And it culminates with, you know, Claudia's goodbye kiss.
Creepy. Which is really creepy.
Didn't she call him, like, my love and stuff?
Yeah, no, she starts... yeah. Obsessing.
Yeah.
Well, because she's like a century old by this point, so that's part of the dynamic of her character. She's stuck in a child's body, but her mind kept aging.
Well, and if I may, I know I'm putting a lot on this gay metaphor thing, but... and I didn't study a lot of gay film, but there's like this whole "you're my first" thing between Lestat and Louis too, where he was the one who changed him, and he's his first boyfriend, kinda. So it's a really rough breakup.
Matt, I will give you money if you lean into the microphone and say, "I wish I knew how to quit you."
It wouldn't be the first time on the podcast.
I know.
Yeah, well, they clearly don't know how to quit him because they cut his throat and throw him in the river.
And he comes back.
Well, because Claudia's a jealous girlfriend at that point, right? Because
exactly.
She's the one in love with Louis, and you just don't understand him the way I do.
Well, that was a way. So I have my suggestions, right? Right about half my blog post is criticizing the movie's treatment of slavery. And so I'm saying that might be a way to bring in Yvette. Yvette is. Maybe make Yvette jealous of Lestat.
Did you see the whole movie?
Did we watch the same film?
25 to 30 minutes of the movie.
So Yvette is jealous of Lestat. That would crank up the sexual aspect even more. Hey, you brought it up first. You were complaining about being lost.
Yes, but it's 5 minutes of the movie.
And there are so many things, and they could have been done.
All right, you spilled a lot of ink on that.
Let's get to the parts that really matter. Paris.
Okay, so they leave the old world behind after they become Americans because people who believe in democracy don't taste as good. Which was that made me laugh.
There was actually. No, I'm not going to get into it because, like you said, it doesn't matter what's on the page.
I mean, you could give a little side note.
Well, they cut out this whole section from the novel, and it wasn't that long, granted, but they actually go to a bunch of places, and all the vampires they meet are like these feral Nosferatu beasts, which is how they come to the conclusion, oh, we're the only civilized ones left.
Yeah, and Armand kind of refers to that because lives 400 years, and all the ones around him are kind of, well, actually, they remind me of 70s punk characters, right? Like they're out of a Clockwork Orange. They're chaos and super violence,
including Finch from V for Vendetta.
Yep, and
that the mime?
That was Santiago.
Is Santiago the mime?
Yes, where he dances. A dancing on the ceiling.
Yeah.
Oh, what a feeling.
A scene that they steal effectively for Doctor Strange as they're running around the walls. So they go to Paris. They take the ship. We're in the early 19th century now.
Oh, is that where that line comes in where crossing the sea is useful if you eat the wraps below deck, and that's supposed to be a Dracula reference?
It is. And people keep dying on board. They can't figure it out. And they keep seeing them throwing bodies into the ocean, which was funny because we know the vampires are killing them. I figured it out. They get to Paris and they essentially enjoy the life. You know, they see some plays. They meet some other vampires. I mean, it's something out of a Tim Burton Batman movie. Like, this is a vampire bar. They all watch plays. It's just like it's smut. Like,
well, it's a grand how do you pronounce it? Grand
Guggenheim.
Yeah, that the Grand Guggenheim Theater that was all dependent on morality plays that were really gory.
Yeah,
and where they actually really kill someone and everyone thinks it's fake.
It's where Scream 2 gets the idea, where they kill someone in front of the movie and they're like, "Oh, it's such a violent movie."
Yeah.
It's funny. It means that it's a smarter movie than if it makes you think it's a smart movie. It's not true.
Well, this did send my tickler puzzling a little bit. So
tickler puzzling.
It's like straight out of the Grinch.
He puzzled and puzzled till his puzzler was sore. And Daniel's heart grew 3 sizes that day.
Oh, that's never going to happen. I'm too much of a curmudgeon.
As we may read him on Popdos. read his film reviews. He's gunning for Chris Cabin as the most, what is it, controversial, most negative film critic or whatever.
I'm never going to beat Armand White, but I don't think it'd be bad to be on that list necessarily.
No, it wouldn't be. Contrarian, most contrarian. Anyway, so when we get there, we meet Armand. Armand is played by the one I remember.
Antonius Banderas Jr.
Who is adorable in this movie.
That's a word.
I mean, he's sexy.
Was this his first American film?
No, Desperado's before this, isn't it?
No, it was a year after this.
I mean, maybe I can check, but he steals the show. I remembered him more than Brad Pitt. My God, he's good. He really is quite good.
The others couldn't make their long hair work. Armand made his long hair work.
And I will say, Louis's got the wiggiest wig that has ever wigged. I mean, my God. Yes.
So he's wigged out. Is that
he's
what you're
wigged
saying?
Out. And when he's talking to Malloy especially, it just looks like...
Oh, with that ponytail that he's got?
I mean, it looks like he could... Like, it's stiff. Like, you could just pop it off the top of his head like a sleeping cap.
And Louis in his kerchief and Lestat in his cap just settled down for a long winter's nap.
He looks good.
There's like some romancing going on.
There is. They look good.
Well, I mean, you know, Armand becomes obsessed with Louis, has to have him, new companion.
Ooh. So that's why he breaks him out of the wall when they wall him up alive in there?
Well, that's a little later. First, Claudia gets jealous about how close Louis is growing to Armand.
And then they almost make out. There's a scene where they're like talking, they're side talking an inch apart. And by the way, speaking of gay stuff, he was Tom Cruise's gay boyfriend in Philadelphia, or Tom Hanks's boyfriend in Philadelphia before this.
That's Antonio Banderas?
Banderas was in it.
Really?
Yeah, that's 93. Yep. That's a year before this. He's excellent in that.
I need to rewatch Philadelphia. It was a good movie.
It's a sad movie.
It's a sad movie, but it was a great movie.
Oh, my God. I don't know if I can sit through it again. It's a very hard watch.
You get to listen to a good Bruce Springsteen song throughout it. I mean,
I could also just listen to a Bruce Springsteen song.
And not be sad.
No, it's a sad Bruce Springsteen song.
I'm mad that I'm sad. He was also in House of Spirits before this. Armand. Let's talk Armand. Let's talk about the show. Let's talk about his vampires.
Yes. Well, he has curated this family of vampires that are doing a theater show.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like, I think Claudia at one point says, how avant-garde.
Yes.
Vampires literally... pretending to be humans, pretending to be vampires.
Well, and it is, like you said, it's a play, like... Horror movies back then, horror shows back then, literally were morality. They still have morality plays. Like Michael Myers will kill the teens that are making out, the people who are having sex, because you're sinning, therefore you must die, right? And that's what's happening here. They have the strumpet, they strip her naked, and they tear her apart. This is after Claudia has revealed herself to be a serial killer as well, as she sees a woman showering. The guys show up thinking that it's a kill that she's trying to bring to their attention, but she's just like, I want to be her. And like
well,
Buffalo Bill
teases her over not having breasts. Being a grown woman. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And she's like, I'll fix this. She'll never live again. And then a scene out of E.T., her face is nestled amongst her dolls.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Drew Barrymore, eat your heart out.
Because Lestat has been buying her dolls for years and years and years.
On the day she converts. On the day that they
turned her.
Yeah, they
so
turn
she's
her.
Like, you know, 80 years old and she's still getting dolls for her birthday. Or death day.
Well, on whatever.
Birthday.
But he doesn't tell her. We figure it out because it's so on the nose. But she's like, why do you give it to me on this day? Is it my birthday? Sort of.
So
the script, man.
Well,
it
ends up, though, in Europe, Claudia brings some random woman to Louis, saying, Louis, turn this woman into a vampire so that she can basically be my mother.
Well, she wants a companion.
Ah.
And the guys just wouldn't feel comfortable with a woman around, so they decide not to do it.
I recall there being several women offstage in the Theater of the Vampires bit. They were all in the audience. They were just...
No, I mean, between Louis and Lestat, it's just always going to be the two of them, you get the feeling.
Right, right.
Bad boyfriend. Anyway, at this point, we start getting some deaths. Lestat is killed kind of by Claudia out of jealousy. She's killed everyone around her, including the music teacher, the maid, the dressmaker.
And that's when you see Tom Cruise being funny. He's like, how will we finish your dress?
Funny. It's a good line.
Absolutely.
Because he really does see these people as objects. And they're like, he was cooking me. Like, you know, she was making your dress. There was nothing wrong. Wait till she's done before you kill her. Then we don't have to pay. Like,
murder can be practical.
He might just be a bad tipper.
Potentially. Lestat doesn't actually die. He comes back much later.
But we don't know that at the time. Right. She cuts his throat open, which is, this is Stan Winston shining, man. Like, this is a bloody gash across his throat. They then light him on fire, kinda, and then they set him adrift in a swamp.
Well, they don't light him on fire, they thought, should we burn him? No, let's dump him in the swamp, which was not a good idea.
Well, then he comes back, and then they then light him under
and
fire.
He's all leathery and weird looking.
That was a great makeup
because
effect.
Because he ate the blood of a crocodile. They say this, right?
The alligator helped.
The alligator helped. There you go. And then they do burn him, and they leave him for dead.
Yeah, they wipe out the whole French Quarter by the look of it.
Which is something they say, right? Yep. Yeah. They go back to Paris at this point. Armand and has turned on them, right?
Not really. Armand is trying to hold back
Santiago, right?
Santiago is the one who wants to have both of them murdered because he believes, through reading their brains, that they have killed Lestat.
Which is true.
To their knowledge, they believe they have killed Lestat, so therefore...
And that's the one crime that vampires cannot commit, which is killing their own. Right?
Kind of. Well, it's one that this group made up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, because they also say it's forbidden to make Claudia a vampire because she's too young.
Which, they were right.
Yes.
I'm actually more intrigued about this idea that, like, Claudia goes on a killing spree and other vampires have to try to stop her. I wish they had explored that more, because, like, that's more interesting that they've created this unstoppable, like, someone that could reveal them as vampires, because this world kind of... It's the thing I didn't like about, say, the Blade movies or Underworld, even though I think the first two Blade movies are great. The idea that there's, like, this underworld of vampires that the rest of the world doesn't know, and there's this whole world you have to keep in check.
Yeah.
The idea that there's this vampire that's just leaving corpses everywhere, that's a problem in Victorian England or France or whatever. That would be a cool thing. Like, they have to stop her before the police get to her, but they just leave it. They're like, we'll kill her now. Let's just, you know, whatever. They kill her in a cool way, though.
That's true. That's true.
Because Louis does turn that woman she brings home into a vampire, and then Santiago and his little cohorts throw her into a well and then wall up Louis' cask of Armand...
Cask of Amontillado.
Yeah, that.
And the idea is that when the sun hits, like, it's just a well outside, so when the sunlight comes in, they just turn to dust.
Yep.
Which is the way, apparently, you kill a vampire in this world, which is totally fine with me. And that's kind of where the movie just gives up on itself.
Yeah, Louis proceeds to just utterly annihilate the rest of the vampires.
Oh, that bit with him in the scythe was great.
In a way that they should have seen coming. Even if Armand is not warning them, which he said he did not, the rest of them should have been more wary. I mean, you live for hundreds of years and you're that stupid.
Well, we also don't know what the powers of vampires is, which kind of bothers me. Because some people can read minds. Louis clearly can't.
Well, remember, the dark gift affects each one in a unique way.
Magic.
Jeez.
It makes me run kind of faster. And it also makes him even paler, so he's more popular with the goth girls.
Oh, there you go.
And boys.
And boys. But yeah, I don't know. I at this point, the movie just kind of, you're right. There's a cool fight scene at the end. He burns them in their coffins and runs around with a scythe, like the literal manifestation of death.
Mm-hmm. And cuts a vampire in half.
Yeah. This is where Sam Winston, like, comes to shine, man. Stan Winston effects. Like, these are great.
Oh, that was a great bit too, where Santiago's like in front of him and he swipes the scythe, and then Santiago rushes away, and then he can predict where Santiago's going to be, so just slices him in half then. That was a nice little action bit.
Doesn't Santiago, like, fight him mime style? He keeps mimicking his movements at first.
Basically.
Shadowboxing.
Yeah, time to give up the mime routine. Your people are getting killed.
And ultimately, he gets cut in half, saves the day, and this is when he kind of drifts back to America.
And watches Superman, which was something that we all needed to see.
Well, I like the thought that, you know, if he can't go out in the sunlight, he can't see certain colors. Like, the ocean is always black. So he's like, I saw the ocean blue again for the first time. He's like, he's happy about something. You know, this is, you know, something he... That's something you never really think... Sorry, my brain is completely wandered off. That's a cost of being a vampire that you don't think of, is if you can't go out in the sun, you can't see certain colors anymore.
But it's not true. There's paintings. There's really life. And remember, he said artificial life doesn't count. right? So you could just walk around with lamps all night long, and he does, and it's just a bullshit line. It's the, you know what it is? It's goth poetry. He thinks he's being profound when he's not, and then he's like, oh, that train is coming right for me. How whimsical. Actually, he'd probably say, whimsical. It's filled with rhymes. I mean, here's the thing. Yes, it was a nice touch to have Superman at the end, but again, it's something that pays off for 30 seconds. That whole sequence is 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It could have been something.
I just liked seeing some of the classic stuff like Sunrise and some of the 50s stuff that he's looking at. And Gone with the Wind, was that in there?
That was one of them. Because remember, the slaves were happy. They were just fine. don't worry about slaves.
Tomorrow's another day.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And again, this is where we get the ending that I was kind of excited for, which is Christian Slater stops talking, which is a thumbs up. But from there, he kind of wanders down to this building, which we aren't really introduced to. He just ends up, again, this is where they created the Joker.
He caught the whiff of ancient death.
Oh, yeah, that bit where he...
I've been to Taco Bell, too.
he finds Lestat and that whole scene with the police helicopter.
Well, but it's cool because there's almost no lines said, right? He goes, I caught the whiff of instant death. And then for the first time, there's no talkie talk. It stops being an Aaron Sorkin movie and starts being a vampire movie where he's wandering through this kind of cemetery. He goes up the staircase and then you just see the rats. And I was just like, Lestat's not dead. Like, I had forgotten this part completely. And I was like, that actually paid off for once. This movie paid off.
Okay, this is in the 70s, right? Artificial lights have been around at this point for decades, and Lestat still thinks they're dangerous.
The whole point is that he's lost his mind because he's been without human blood for so long.
He's eating rats. He was in a cave
with a box of rats.
Or more importantly, he was just playing Louis.
Yeah, he wants Louis back, so he needs to look desperate. He needs to need him. It's a dependency relationship, and it's not healthy, but he's going to come right back to him, isn't he?
Yeah, there's an article I linked to in my blog post where it's like, you know, he needs a coddled codependent fan, but enough about Katie Holmes.
Oh boy.
We're just about out of time here.
Let's get to the actual ending, though, before we run out of time. The actual ending is Malloy at the end says, turn me into a vampire. And Louis is like, you haven't been listening to a word I've said. And then he flees, and then Malloy tries to flee, but he still has the tapes. And Lestat catches up to Malloy and basically says, I'm going to turn you into a vampire. And then there's a Guns N' Roses cover of Sympathy for the Devil, and then it ends.
Yeah, they're on the Bay Bridge, and he kills a dozen people as he pulls off to the side of the road in the middle of the Bay Bridge. Whatever. All right, movie. You tricked me once, movie. And then, of course, he joins the Avengers at the end. You know, Nick shows up, and he's like, would you like to live forever or just be a hero? And, you know, and then there's an eye patch, and, it happens. So
post-credit sequence, of course.
God, this movie. let's just go around the table. What do you think, Kelsey?
It kind of reminded me of like the season of American Horror Story Hotel with the vampires. Like, I kind of wonder if American Horror Story was inspired by like these books and films.
Probably. I'll take it. It's been a while since I've rewatched that season, but it's good.
Well, I just saw it not too long ago, so
it's good. I mean, yeah. It does what this movie couldn't, which is time-wise. So it allows them to flesh out what the vampires mean there more. This year, just a lot of men in starched white, you know.
I thought it was fine. I think the book is better, and if you're really, really interested in this, then you should go get the book for like $2 at a used bookstore somewhere. But I mean, the movie, if it's, I don't know, ever on TV or if it's ever on Netflix, you could spend your time in worse ways. They at least cared enough to try to take what the book was doing and translate it as accurately as possible instead of trying to turn it into a Point Break to the vampiring. So points to them for that.
Fair enough. Charlie?
You know, it was definitely a snapshot in time. It was riding the wave of gothic fascination from the 80s. It was definitely one of the first, in my opinion, hardcore homoerotic movies out there that hit the mainstream. It was amazing. It provided me years of journaling and feelings and LARP character inspirations. However, I hadn't seen it since the 90s,
yeah.
And I watched it again, and it totally does not hold up. And I'm looking at myself going, wow, I was that way? And yes, I was.
There you go,
oh, boy.
Matt.
It could stand to have some tightening up because some parts were just kind of boring, but I actually thought it was pretty good. The acting I thought was pretty good, not just Tom Cruise. Also, I'll disagree with you guys. I thought Louis did a good job as being the whole I hate myself routine. And Kirsten Dunst playing an adult in a 10-year-old's body. I mean, I didn't really think Armand was that great, but it's a pretty good movie, I think, although I wouldn't buy it.
So watch once.
Yes, I guess it's not my tagline, isn't it?
So if you haven't seen it, what you need to see is a movie called What We Do in the Shadows. It was done by the guy who directed Thor Ragnarok. It stars Jemaine Clement, and it's a parody of this movie. It's really easy to make fun of vampire movies because we've been doing it forever. I mean, Young Frankenstein made fun of Frankenstein, and then he did Dracula Dead and Loving It with Lady, which is a train wreck, but whatever. Like, it's easy to make fun of the vampire tropes. It is. It's interesting to see What We Do in the Shadows making fun of this, because it's about a bunch of men who live together who are vampires, and one's a fop, one is a Nosferatu vampire creature thing, one is essentially Lestat, but he's not really Lestat, he thinks he's Lestat. This movie is a cartoon, you're right. I'm not a gay man in the 90s, and I'm not really into slender men with like starched white wool on, but this is such a timepiece. I was baffled. My notes just trail off at one point because I don't know what's even happening. My wife was completely entangled. She was confused by the end, but it is, if it were an Italian film, I'd be in love with this. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because it's visually stimulating, and they were just like, Lestat, I think I love you, but I'm not sure. And it's just gestures, and like, it's a foreign film in English. It's a shame.
It's me, Louis. I'm a vampire.
Oh, boy.
Which Mario brother was that? Lestat. I am Lestat, diploma. anyway, I would say this movie is kind of an embafflement. I'm going to say if you haven't seen it, you kind of have to just see it. Like, if it's not part of your past, it's almost better. Because, like Charlie was saying, it doesn't hold up great. The effects are still cool, but it's wow. with that, we have officially ended season 4 of Myopia Defend Your Childhood.
Hooray.
Yeah. We have, appropriately enough, a TV Myopia Mornings to end the season. And appropriately enough, it is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. but July, we will go into a month of reruns for the first time to come back in August with season 5 and a whole new cast and a whole new way to put your past on trial. So tune in next week and every future week when we put another piece of your past on trial, guys. Thanks, everyone.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by The Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.